Tomorrow, the Flood. From There Is Nothing to Fear by Santiside. Read by Sam Gabriel. Based on the works of J.K. Rowling. Chapter 9. Dolores Umbridge. The Occasional Push. The senior undersecretariat was a marvelously important position. Dolores had been fortunate enough to serve the Minister for Magic for nearly 4 years, and in this capacity she had enforced discipline in the minister's office, investigated the premature disclosure of sensitive information to the public, and managed a number of necessary tasks that did not merit the minister's direct attention, both at his request and on her own initiative. In all that time, and through all those tasks, there had been only a few occasions on which Dolores had any cause to feel dismay, and most of them had occurred in the past week. Last Monday, Tom Riddle, the headmaster of Hogwarts, was nearly murdered at the hands of malcontents yet unknown. It would have been a simple issue to address, except for the sabotage of the Triwizard Cup, which made it an international embarrassment, which of course meant a personal embarrassment both for herself and for Cornelius Fudge. The French diplomat, Laurent October, had been profusive in his apologies and promised to extend his personal resources to uncover the plot. Unfortunately, only so much could be uncovered. In the preceding week, Dolores called on Alanis Murphy for a story to be put out in the Daily Prophet that connections had been followed that led to Igor Karkaroff, lately the rector at Durmstrang, and more recently a fugitive assassin already guilty of murdering a Russian delegate. It was a good story. And then this morning that bitch Rita Skeeter put out a piece to question every inch of it, complete with quotes from sources both particular and various, which everybody good and well knew meant the Death Eaters, which meant in turn that Riddle himself had endorsed her article. Dolores had a harsh word about it with Duke Pruitt. "Tom Piddle makes a mess again," Pruitt had said, too right, and he had no good reason to do so either. It all could have been smoothed over, perhaps, given the necessary time and resources, but Dolores had not even had an opportunity to pat the wrinkles before Cornelius called on her for an explanation. "The anonymous source that Skeeter mentioned in the fifth paragraph here, that was probably Mark Mitchell," Dolores said. "He's a liaison officer under International Magical Corporation, so he would be able to confirm that Durmstrang hasn't breathed a word to us." "Muggleborn," she added. "Not that there's anything wrong with that. Some of her colleagues were Muggleborns, as it happened. Nicola Batworthy, married, of course, with a name like that, had even offered to take Dolores along on her next trip to France. As Dolores made a report, the room's third occupant stood by quietly, paying no more attention to the conversation than strictly necessary. The Minister for Magic usually merited at least 2 aurors, and under the circumstances, 3 or even 4 would not have been inappropriate, but only 1 was fit for the job. Ever since the attack on Riddle and the subsequent and unfair, treacherous leak regarding the present state of the investigation, Cornelius had required a security detail that was both competent and trustworthy. John Dawlish had been assigned on Dolores's personal recommendation. Dolores had never known of him before her work at the Ministry, but the Office of Improper Use of Magic often called for a hit wizard or 3 to subdue wrongdoers, whether willful or confused, and Dolores had found John to be diligent, reliable, and, best of all, more interested in doing his job than in getting full credit for it. At 4:25, John proceeded with the procedure to confirm the fixity of both the minister's office fireplace and their destination at Hogwarts, which had been temporarily joined by an isolated Thataway in the flu network. At 5:05, he announced that the connection was secure. "This is highly irregular," Dolores commented as they prepared to depart. She had already said so, but the thing remains true. It was as though Riddle had issued the minister a summons. "He should be coming here to see you, Cornelius." "True enough, but the chap was nearly murdered. Lost an arm and all that," Cornelius pointed out. "It's enough of a wonder that he's out of bed already. But you know what his type and like. He'll work himself to death before he turns 80. Sure as eggs are eggs. I wouldn't want to travel in his condition," he added, always so considerate of others. The minister's empathy constituted half his mettle as a politician.
"My boy says that Riddle teaches 2 classes in the same hour," John said.
"What did I tell you, Dolores? He's overworking himself," Cornelius said. "Besides, I've been meaning to speak with him about this Robertson business."
Lou Robertson, some jumped-up Muggleborn, not a Death Eater, but not opposed to them either. She was the chair of the Wizarding Railways board, but the backstairs talk was that Robertson had bigger things in mind for her career, and Cornelius thought that the right word from Riddle might make her rethink any plans to campaign for his office. "Very good, sir." There was nothing unbecoming about their meeting, Dolores reminded herself, and a great deal of people considered Riddle a national hero for some reason, so there was nothing to gain and much to lose from snubbing him. This potential challenge by Robertson might be the least of their problems if people got it into their heads that the Minister for Magic was weak on national pride. Following John and Cornelius, Dolores stepped into the fireplace and came out through a large hearth at the kitchens, she murmured. "Of all the places, Minister, I rather think that we ought to go through a fire at the entrance hall, if not the headmaster's own office."
"You take these things so personally, Dolores," Cornelius chided her.
"I merely think that this is hardly befitting of your position."
Cornelius smiled and shrugged. "I can hardly complain. A short walk is good for the heart. And convincing Riddle to have a word with Lou Robertson would be even better for his standing in the Wizarding Gambit." If there were a blue sky on the other side of these clouds, it was that Dolores got to see the house elves. Like most right-thinking people, Dolores had been concerned that a free elf would turn haughty and indolent, but in this one respect, she would admit to having been pleasantly surprised. Her past mistake was shown most starkly now as she passed by the kitchen brigade. Had she been asked to sort out the free elves from those that had chosen to remain enslaved to Hogwarts, Dolores would have failed. Really, if there was anything to complain about, it was that house elves were too deferential as a breed. If they paid as much respect to Escape Grace as they did to Dolores, then how much was that respect really worth? Beside her, John offered no comment, and indeed seemed to have no thoughts at all, except to stay alert for possible dangers to the minister. He was a good wizard, always focused on the job, and did not seem to relax at all until they reached the headmaster's office. There'd been a gargoyle here, but now there was just an old oaken door with a brass knocker in the form of a lion with a ring in its mouth.
"The password, if you please," Cornelius said.
John nodded.
"Now you will see a pool that was filled with sand."
And then came the sound of seven heavy locks sliding and slithering out of place. Riddle's office was uncomfortably cold, and more uncomfortably bare. Besides the bookcases, full and fit to burst, and the ebony desk, there was little that could be considered comfortable or in good taste. Only the dog's bed suggested that anything, beast or wizard, might be able to relax in this room. It was a very far cry from the many cabinets of curiosities that had filled Dumbledore's office on that single occasion that Umbridge had been required to meet with him. The dog itself, thank Merlin, was nowhere to be seen. Dolores could appreciate a dog if it could make itself useful and keep itself clean, which was to say that she rarely appreciated them, but Riddle's dog was a great, awful beast that stank and slavered. There was a rumor, per Jossie Whitelaw in the Wand Tracking Office, that Riddle fed people to his dog during the war. And of course there was something unnatural about a dog, even a magical one, that had lived so many years and still looked so hale. Behind his desk, Riddle gave nothing away. He might have been a statue as still as he was, and Dolores narrowly avoided startlement when he spoke.
"Welcome, Mr. Fudge," he said. "Take a seat."
Riddle himself remained seated, without even the most abbreviated suggestion of standing at attention to the minister's entrance. There was only one seat to take, and Riddle had not even mentioned other present company, as if they were so much furniture. It could have been an oversight, but Dolores chose to take offense. She smiled, but in the privacy of her thoughts, she made an entry in a very special book.
"I heard that you lost an arm," Cornelius said compassionately. He had always been a kindly man and so attentive.
Dolores hadn't known him personally until she became the minister's senior undersecretary. But she had known him long before by reputation. Cornelius Fudge had a knack for names and faces, and his mind was a steel trap for the little things, last year's bout of black cat flu and children's birthdays. Riddle nodded. He flexed the fingers of his right hand, but beneath his glove and sleeve, the only thing that Dolores could discern was its fine mobility, indistinguishable from an arm of flesh. Dolores said as much.
"It must be very handy," John added.
Cornelius laughed. Wordplay was childish stuff, but Dolores spread the room and permitted herself a bare, fleeting smile, enough to acknowledge the joke without putting undue emphasis on her own reaction. Riddle gave away nothing about his feelings, not even a note of disapproval. It was as though John had said nothing at all. Perhaps he smiled behind the mask. People said he was a muggle-born orphan, and it would be just like that type to enjoy a pun.
You may think so.
Riddle finally allowed, and with his other hand he pulled with a glove to reveal a masterful, if macabre, work of artifice. Smooth, bony fingers that danced fluidly like a spider spinning silk, no less white than porcelain. Indeed, a fitting compliment to his mask.
But it is almost entirely useless, he exclaimed.
Beside her, John watched Riddle's fingers with what Dolores judged to be a morbid fascination. She would have thought his line of work would inure him to a mere prosthetic. Was the artificer not fit the task? Asked Cornelius. I could recommend a witch who worked at my aunt's.
The problem is nothing so trifling that a more expensive limb could resolve it. My left hand can perform as well as my right in nearly every activity that matters, and for unimportant matters I can enchant another device to act on my behalf,
Riddle explained, while his prosthetic tapped and fluttered across his desk like a hurried pianist. For her life, Dolores couldn't see how it might fall short except in its garish appearance, and Riddle, if nothing else had been established about his personality, had threateningly common tastes. Casually, Riddle gripped the elbow of his masterwork arm and pulled. The arm detached without a sound, and he dropped it at his feet. Dolores might have yelped in surprise, but if she did, so had Cornelius, and she only didn't want him to feel alone.
I will only want for two hands in a duel, but any enchantment that would make my hands nimble enough for that work would be too sensitive to not be disrupted by the very magic that would convene at my false fingertips. Even a simple gesture would most likely freeze in place half-complete, as magic vied with magic, one purpose competing against the other.
He sighed, like the beating of many locust wings.
I considered Polyjuice, of course, and there are solutions to most of the relevant problems, but it would also introduce a single point of failure, and, as recent events proved to us, I may be capable of protecting my own person, but Polyjuice can be poisoned.
Riddle, really? I understand your concern, but don't you think that you're bordering on the paranoiac? Asked Cornelius. One moment passed, and then a second.
You will of course forgive me. I was only targeted by assassins several times this year,
Riddle said impertinently. I'll be happy to assign a couple of aurors to your security, Cornelius offered. I know that there have been issues with some of them, but you could pick anybody that you'd like. Except for Dolish here. I'm afraid that he's already got an important responsibility, he added, and he smiled at John.
It really is no matter in the end. And this body is only a limb, however much I may like it,
Riddle said.
I can take care of my security. I wanted to speak with you about Pettigrew.
Yes, of course, you're right about him, for sure, Cornelius said easily. Dolores, the situation was fully resolved the day before last, Dolores said happily. The Department of Magical Accidents and Catastrophes wants the Minister's own department, so he is uniquely positioned to comprehend their intelligence. The department have taken over the scene, and presently are going over Pettigrew's house. Or what remains of it, she added with a small, circumstantially appropriate laugh, with a first-rate tooth comb. And Owen Upjohn will deliver an update report to me every day. Riddle's mask didn't turn, and for a minute Dolores wondered whether he had even listened to her.
Minister Fudge comprehends their intelligence, does he?
Yes, Dolores said. Not a little reluctantly. She could feel something against her back, so to speak, and rather suspected that it was a wall.
Then why does Owen report his findings to you?
There's a great deal of responsibility invested in my position, Cornelius said. Dolores is kind enough to abstract some matters for me.
Yes, precisely,
Dolores agreed with relief. Cornelius was an incredible delegator. No doubt it went hand in hand with being a people person.
But important matters of state as they were, and threats to the state, are surely given your touch,
Riddle said. Of course, Cornelius agreed. Finally, Riddle turns to face her.
But you are handling the matter of Peter Pettigrew, a matter on which I desire to speak with you.
He turned back to Cornelius.
For several days, Minister.
I have been busy, as I am sure you will appreciate, and well, Pettigrew can hardly pose any kind of threat now that he's dead.
Very well,
Riddle said, as if Cornelius were a student who had given a barely satisfactory answer.
Many things have been implied. Provide me with a full report.
I'll detail Pruitt to draft a report for you as soon as we return from the Ministry, assuming, of course, that the Minister has no other tasks for me, Dolores said. I see no reason why not, Cornelius began.
You misunderstand,
Riddle said.
You would provide your report now.
Dolores rankled at the demand. Who was he these days to be so impertinent to her? But Cornelius forced a smile and said, "It's all right, Dolores. With a week like he's had, I might be impatient as well. Ember already here." He was surely still thinking about Robertson. "You were right about him for sure," Cornelius said. "The Aurors tried to take him into their custody, of course, but that didn't work out. And there's nothing to worry about, though. He's dead as the Pharaohs. So all's well that ends well."
"How did he die?"
"The son of a bachelor blew himself up, I heard."
"In what manner was he blown up? Was he inflated, or was there a detonation?"
"What does it bloody matter how?" Cornelius said. "Detonation as it happens, I think. Messy business. I'm glad I wasn't there. My deepest condolences," he said to John, who had been.
"Did anyone witness the act?"
"I don't know. I wasn't there," Cornelius said sharply. He closed his eyes and breathed deeply. "I'm sorry, I just don't know. Dolores, the man was nearly killed. Could you give him a verbal report?" Dolores smiled.
"I would be so pleased."
"Start at the beginning," Riddle said.
"My career began in the DMLE," Dolores said, allowing herself a small, appropriate amount of pride. "So I can assure you that the matter was handled exactly by the book. Yesterday morning, Director Bounds dispatched a squad of hit wizards to the residence of one Peter Pettigrew. They verified that Pettigrew was present, then laid an anti-separation jinx, whereupon the Flu Network Authority disconnected his fireplace, which had been under surveillance from the time that we were notified that he was a subject of concern. John himself can attest to all of these things as the administrant auror on the scene."
"So I have been informed,"
Riddle said neutrally. At least she thought it had been neutral. Damn that mask and damn that voice. "Before the hit wizards could approach, Pettigrew blew up, detonated, I mean, exploded. He exploded his house," Dolores continued. "Dear Macy has given up hope for concrete record, but the very best orologists, retroscopes, and forensic seers have been assigned to the case, and the reports, as I have mentioned, will be made to me at the start and close of every day. Whatever there is for us to learn, we will learn it," she assured Riddle. "There, job well done. Thank you, Dolores. You're welcome, Cornelius. Or can I call you Niels?" "Of course, Dolores. Nothing is too familiar for my favorite—"
"What about Pettigrew?"
An immobilizing charm could not have frozen Dolores' thoughts more quickly. Riddle asked the question softly, but in the way that an iron gauntlet wrapped in velvet was soft.
"What do you mean, what about him?" Cornelius exclaimed. "He's dead!"
"Elaborate."
"Blew himself up, like I already told you. Boom! He was in the house, wasn't he?"
Cornelius checked, glancing at Dolores.
"See, he was in the house! Dead as a drowned rat!"
And there was a moment in which Riddle said nothing, until it became clear that he expected more. Cornelius looked again at Dolores, who had enough presence of mind to gesture at John.
"You were there, John,"
she said sweetly. "I think that you'll be able to give the most detailed account." That was the other benefit of sharing credit. If John's report was insufficient, then there was only one person with whom Riddle could be frustrated. Dolores could even be frustrated with John alongside him, if that were necessary. John began without hesitation.
"As the Minister for Magic and the Senior Undersecretary described," he said, "it appears that Pettigrew died in the same explosion that destroyed his house. So far as we've been able to ascertain, once Pettigrew recognized that escape was impossible, he decided to commit suicide rather than submit to any of our methods."
"So you've told me," Riddle said. "Why do you believe that he did not flee beforehand?"
"We don't have sufficient information to draw a firm conclusion, but I can refer to possible reasons. It is more than likely that Pettigrew expected you to die, which would probably have given him more freedom of movement. He might have planned to flee the country at some point, but not until later, so that no one connected his departure to your murder. If he had material to assist him, such as forged documentation or an illegal portkey, then he might have waited to destroy this until he knew that he had been caught."
"Then it is your judgment that Pettigrew was working with a wider network?"
It took a moment for John to respond. He breathed deeply and began slowly.
"I must caution you against settling on answers too early in our investigation," John said. "But with respect to that particular question, it does seem straightforwardly logical to say that Pettigrew had at least 7 associates, if we make the reasonable assumption that he was not among the assailants."
"And he destroyed his house in order to destroy material that might point to this network?"
"I must caution—"
"I've heard your warning. Tell me your best guess."
"It is a plausible explanation," John admitted. "Why else would he kill himself in such a dramatic fashion?"
"This was a conspiracy, Minister,"
Riddle said to Cornelius.
"Do you understand why I am concerned about this beyond the matter of my own physical safety?"
Cornelius shrugged.
"A conspiracy of lunatics,"
he replied. Anarchists! And now that Pettigrew is dead, there's just one of them left.
One that we know of, Riddle said.
There's only so many madmen in the world, Dolores observed, coming to Cornelius' support. And they cannot all have been involved. Well put, Dolores, Cornelius said, paying her a quick smile. We have to consider the facts rationally.
You found his corpse,
Riddle said, returning his focus to John with nary an indication that he had been waylaid. What was left of it? John said. There were bits of him strewn across 5 square yards. The biggest piece of him was just his right thumb. You aren't the only person who has suffered an injury on your dexter side, he joked. Cornelius chuckled, soft and awkward, and Dolores tittered in support. Riddle didn't laugh, but she was sure he was at least unoffended. There were all kinds of faults with that wizard, not incredibly important, of course, but squeamishness was not one of them. He just didn't laugh much or at all.
You are absolutely certain that it is Pettigrew's corpse?
Asked Riddle. John sighed. We can't be completely sure. You're right to have noted that, he admitted. If someone had been transfigured to take Pettigrew's place, or if they had taken Polyjuice before they were killed, then they wouldn't have reverted after the explosion. I do think that, as my best guess, so to speak, it really was Pettigrew himself at that house. For all that he has been up to dodgy dealings in the past, there's never been any indication that he was willing to commit murder.
Until now.
Until now, John said. He swallowed, and silence sat uncomfortably in the room between them. Dolores was about to interrupt and divert the conversation to something safer and easier to finish when he began to speak again. And most of his acquaintances have been accounted for, or don't seem the sort to die for someone else's cause. Another moment passed in silence, only slightly less tense than the last.
You may recall, Riddle said coolly, that my express recommendation was to capture Pettigrew.
I can hardly control whether a wizard offs himself when I come to call, can I? John said.
You took insufficient precautions. You were sloppy,
Riddle said, turning his mask to Cornelius. How much of the budget do you want burned on this? Cornelius asked. I would have liked to prosecute him too, but he's dead. Job done, case closed.
These other pieces, Riddle said. Describe them, John.
For the first time tonight, Riddle sounded almost amiable. If Dolores had to say, the type of tone that one used with a favorite subordinate. But a part of her resisted the comparison and rankled at the implication that any of them worked for Riddle. Fragments of meat and bone, and a frankly incredible amount of blood. Why, sir? Dolores considered whether she ought to shudder. The photographs had been a grisly sight and decided against it. Riddle was a martial type of wizard, and Cornelius was no cocktail himself. Having risen from the Department of Magical Accidents and Catastrophes, neither of them would appreciate a show of nerves. She almost thought that Riddle hadn't heard the question, and then he finally spoke.
He could have prepared all of it beforehand. On 2 proud occasions, Dumbledore permitted me to obtain a corpse, or what remained of one, and subject it to every magical analysis that I could bring to bear, and on both occasions I was fooled. It is not out of the question that Pettigrew is still alive.
He was clever enough to run this scheme, I'll grant him that, Cornelius said. But there's no evidence he was ever a student of alchemy.
Pettigrew wouldn't have had to perform the work himself. He was, or perhaps is, in league with Dumbledore.
Is? Do you mean that Pettigrew thought he was working for Dumbledore still? A slow, quiet breath hissed out from behind Riddle's mask.
For better or for worse, Dumbledore is not dead.
For one indignant minute, Cornelius looked as though his eyes would bulge from their sockets and roll away. It passed, and his expression turned well-humored. See here, Riddle, said Cornelius, smiling softly. You can't seriously believe that. Come now. Certainly Pettigrew might have gotten himself involved with terrorist elements. But to think that Dumbledore himself is still alive, it's absolutely preposterous. You killed him yourself.
That is certainly what he meant for us to believe. Someone else came to Hogwarts in his place, wearing his face, and it is they who I slew, while Dumbledore slipped into hiding.
To do what? Wash dishes under an assumed name? I don't believe what I'm hearing, Cornelius said. It is an entirely unrealistic idea, Dolores said just as soon as Cornelius looked in her direction. John was less quick to agree. Perhaps it would be worthwhile to consider the idea, at least in theory.
We shouldn't pass judgment until we've reckoned with all the facts.
No, it must just be a case of the nerves, no offence meant, Cornelius insisted. Or you must be getting restless. After all these years, he continued, looking to Dolores and John more than to Riddle.
I don't blame you, old boy. Educational administration must be an awful bore for a veteran duelist of your stature.
I assure you that my faculties are sharper and more refined than they were 13 years ago, Riddle said.
But this... I don't understand you. How could Dumbledore be back? The minister asked. This is just an isolated incident. An accident, even, maybe. You took a blow to the head, didn't you? I saw the state of your mask when you returned. I understand now, he continued, speaking more and more quickly. Pettigrew did more than make the cup into a portkey. He enchanted it somehow, confounded you, the Granger girl, too. Couldn't it be so, Dolores, Dolish?
Almost, Dolores uttered her agreement, but her lips barely parted before she felt very keenly that to speak would be to misstep.
Listen well, because I will not repeat myself. Dumbledore did not die,
Riddle said.
He laid a trap for me, and only my good fortune prevented me from coming to worse harm.
It's a ridiculous idea,
Fudge insisted. Sir, maybe it would be prudent to take some precautions, John said, but Fudge would have none of it.
No, he reiterated, and he jabbed a finger at Riddle. No, I will not have you spread a panic. It's bad enough that you and the Granger girl disappeared. If the international community got wind that you accused a dead man, Riddle, nobody will take you seriously. Do you really want that? Do you want to start an international incident?
There have been several international incidents already, Riddle said coolly. Besides, I am sure that Monsieur October will be delighted to pin a name to the crime, and a British name at that.
You're asking me to commit ministry resources to a wild goose chase, and a ridiculous one at that,
Fudge said, almost spitting.
Do you know what they'll say of me if I go out and tell the Wizengamot that we're looking for a dead man?
I do not think that it is their opinion that you should be concerned about, Riddle said.
Now look here, Riddle, Fudge said, his face beginning to redden. I've always given you a free hand. I might not have agreed with all of your decisions, but I've kept quiet. But if you're going to work against me...
He trailed off, then curled his lip. Of course. You're trying to take me out before the election, aren't you? He stood and made a show of dusting off the cuffs of his sleeves.
Well, I won't have it. Do you think that you can dictate terms to me? You're not as terrifying as you'd like to make yourself out to be, you know.
I like to think that my charms outweigh the terror.
There you are again, hiding behind your vagaries. All you've done is hint and imply and suggest and hide behind veiled threats and proverbs,
Fudge said, close to snarling.
You couldn't even beat Karkaroff! And didn't you once beat Dumbledore? How do you even know that it's really you? Maybe the real Tom Riddle died a decade ago.
As the Minister for Magic continued to rant, everyone else in the room held still. Dolores couldn't speak to Riddle's reasons or even John's, but she was fixed in both place and thought by a growing apprehension, a suspicion, a dawning horror.
And what does it matter if you didn't? Any order in the Force has dueled twice as much as you have in the past 13 years. Thrice as much. Whatever comes after thrice. I won't let you threaten my reconciliation with the world. Don't you remember how much an ounce of Swedish leather used to cost?
Then Riddle set his wand aside and snapped his fingers, and many things happened.
Held him,
he said. And his prosthetic writhed to life on the floor and circled up Fudge's leg. When Fudge jerked away from his chair, the arm tightened, and its fingers seized his calf like viper's fangs, and he fell to the ground. As the prosthetic crawled across his body, Riddle rose from his seat like the shadow of a dementor.
Be still,
Riddle said. And the prosthetic came to rest, with its fingers uneasily close to the minister's throat.
You can't! I'm the minister!
I believe that you have misunderstood the nature of our relationship, Riddle said. I never made a request of you that it was not an order, and each time that you disobeyed me, the day of your calamity crept closer.
Just let us talk about this, Fudge pleaded. You'll never get away with it,
Fudge warned. Somewhere in the middle of it, Fudge had managed to scramble hands and elbows to sit upright, but the sight somehow made him look more powerless. Face red with fear and anger, shirt wet with blood and tears, leaning against the desk, as if he could not support himself, and perhaps he could not.
If it had been possible for you to destroy me, then I would have never permitted you to remain in office,
Riddle finally said, his tone gentle.
I used to enjoy these episodes, Cornelius. You mean well, but you are a small man, and you know it. And I found an equally small but reliable delight in feeding your weakness, reeling you in until you were entirely dependent upon me and stoking your fears again.
Prosthetic gripped the minister's shoulder, squeezing sharply, and he gasped in pain and surprise.
Dolly's dead. Just stand there for Merlin's sake.
But when Jean lifted his wand, he pointed it at Dolores, not Riddle.
Dolish, my God, Dolish, what's the meaning of this?
Fudge cried. Dolores herself was unable to say anything, too sick with fear. No, not fear, knowledge. They were going to be killed, both of them.
I'm afraid that Mr. Dolish is devoted to a higher cause than your re-election, Riddle said. Did you think that I would call you here to play this game without making sure that you were accompanied by one of my people?
He made a short laugh.
It's true, I might have done. But I didn't.
He shifted ever so slightly, as if behind his mask, to look Dolores in the eyes.
It was no trouble at all, Cornelius, to make sure that you would cut your security detail to a bare minimum.
She was responsible for this, Dolores realized. She had only played a small part. But she understood it now. Like the headmaster had said, Fudge was reliable, so was she. No, Dolores had done the right thing. The minister had asked, and she had delivered. It wasn't her fault. She only did as she was told.
How long?
Dolores asked John. But he didn't answer.
So it was a coup all along, Fudge said.
Nothing of the sort,
Riddle insisted.
Consider it an insurance policy. This was not... I hesitate to describe it as a plan. Perhaps it is sufficient to say that I anticipated a different course of events, a longer peace, a deeper consolidation, the resolution of puzzles that still elude me. I was going to let you die in office, he said. Which is not to say that you can't still die in office. I only mean that I envisioned it differently.
Fudge's eyes widened.
What are you going to do to me?
It was not a question, Dolores imagined, that could possibly have a pleasant answer.
You were very useful to me, Cornelius. It was never hard to whisper the right things into your ear. But you were distant from my politics, and that was convenient. And as I have said, it was a pleasant diversion to play upon your insecurities. If Dumbledore really were as dead as I once thought him to be, then I could have remained a perfect friend to you. Even as I decided that Britain should rejoin the world at large, I thought that I would allow you to remain where and how you were, bloviating and taking offence at all the right times without any need for direction on my part. You would have no idea how pleasant it is to know that someone will do what they're supposed to do without any oversight. Or perhaps you do,
Riddle said, and his mask tilted up at Dolores. Never in her life had Dolores so desired to have an invisibility cloak on hand.
But the fact is that Dumbledore is alive, and you cannot be trusted to prosecute the kind of war that is to come. I will need someone at the helm who can really steer a ship. And not just scream into the storm.
Riddle's wand twitched into his left hand. When Fudge tried to scramble away, the prosthetic tightened its grip. Dolores heard something snap, and Fudge shrieked as the shoulder of his robes began to turn dark and wet.
Please, God, Riddle, save me!
He cried, fruitlessly clawing at the limb. For an optimistic moment, Dolores thought, as Riddle circled around his desk and crouched low to Fudge, that all he had sought was the minister's humiliation and abject surrender, and he would spare the minister after all. Then his wand twitched, and for a time, at once both very short and too long, there was only the sound of Fudge's scream. Finally, from the scream, there began to emerge sounds that were almost words, and at last they acquired a form of structure.
What do you want from me? Anything else you
have? To be frank with you, Cornelius, the only thing that I want from you is your death.
Riddle made another gesture with his wand, too complicated and too quick for Dolores to follow. Water dribbled from Fudge's mouth, and he crumpled to the floor. As Fudge shook and gulped on the floor, Riddle turned to Dolores, and she trembled.
I've never said a cross word about you. Dolores lied. I'm a civil servant for Merlin's sake, not a politician. I serve the country just like...
Riddle lifted his hand, palm facing her, and Dolores quieted immediately. Unlike that blubbering fool Cornelius gasping for air, choking on water, she could take a cue. Fudge let out an almighty gasp, and out of his mouth slipped a small fish, white and speckled red. For want of water, it writhed. Fudge drew his wand, careful not to let its end point at anybody but himself. Another fish slipped past his mouth, slightly larger than the first, spattered with red and black markings as if it had been painted, and the wand fell from his hand.
He reached out to grab it, scrabbling across the floor, and Riddle stomped his foot against Fudge's hand. There was a snapping sound as the wand broke. Riddle leaned forward, and there was another snap and a gurgled scream. Riddle said, clicking as if he were calling back a hunting dog, and the prosthetic scaled him like a standing stone and affixed its end to the stump on his arm. This couldn't be real, one part of her insisted, but the other could taste death already. There must be a trick in what was happening. There must be a way out. There must be something, anything.
I can give you any names that you want, Dolores said. Anyone that you want to get rid of. I'll make sure that they're sacked by the week's end. Or sent to Azkaban, even, she said.
Did he want more? He hadn't responded to her yet.
I can be useful for you. Ask me and I'll have it done. Just give me a chance. John, tell him that I can be trusted!
She begged, but John did nothing, even as his hand trembled. If Riddle were going to go back on the peace, take over the government in full, whatever it was that he intended, the ministry would have to be purged, wouldn't it? There'd have been those backward pureblondes in the Aura office and any number of malcontents in other departments, and Riddle would want to know them.
I know people, traitors, she continued, falsely believing me to be receptive to their plans. I have been made aware of disloyal persons.
Whose identities you did not see fit to reveal into your life hung in the balance, Riddle observed.
A mistake? I would have said something,
Dolores insisted. She had fallen to her knees. She could not remember doing so, but her robes were already soaked with pond water.
I was going to say something. Suddenly, Jossie Whitelaw collects muggle literature. He walks into their bookstore. He walks into their bookstores, buys filthy prosaic stuff with their own money. Cat O'Neill, she's got a squib brother. She leaves presents in his house on Christmas.
Who else?
Batworthy, Nicola Batworthy. He's taken vacations in France since the partition ended. Maybe too many. Surely too many.
Dolores continued, names and misdeeds erupting like vomit. She named Duke Pruitt and Alanis Murphy and Julita Roach and
silence, Riddle said, and Dolores silenced herself. Umbridge, isn't it? That's an old name. Your family inherited a seat on the Wizarding Gamut, didn't they?
They didn't,
Dolores said.
I could have sworn I heard something about your father being on the Wizarding Gamut, Riddle said. It must have been one of the elected seats. Of course, most of them were troublemakers.
No,
Dolores stammered, till she was unsure what exactly she was denying, or whether she was merely pleading for her life.
Then what was that celebrated talk about your father?
I lied. He was a custodian, nothing important. He mopped the floors, she cried. Please, please, he was nobody. I'm nobody.
Just so long as you remember that, Riddle said. Tonks will be able to substitute for Cornelius in the short term, but I will soon have need of her. He must therefore die by the summer's end.
Riddle continued, as if Fudge were not dying beneath him, coughing so violently that the water of his throat was speckled red, and the fish were delivered with torn fins and broken tails.
This means that I will need a new minister for magic. I admit that the timing is less than ideal for a transition,
Riddle continued.
But Dumbledore is alive, and that means that I cannot afford to sow the wind and let the whirlwind arise where it may.
And there was a deep silence, broken only by the sound of flopping fish.
Dobby,
Riddle said warmly, and there appeared a house elf in garish, motley dress. The elf blanched at once, eyes wide at the sight of Fudge. And then he closed his eyes and put away the worry on his face. All of it lasted but a passing moment, almost too quick to catch, and then there was nothing but a strict and attentive attitude. Riddle crouched somewhat and met the elf's gaze with his empty mask.
I'm terribly sorry to call on you in your own time. Take a fee from my account, whatever you can tolerate, but there is a matter that requires your personal discretion.
The house elf nodded. I am still meeting with a party from the ministry, but when I am done there will be one or two bodies to clean up. I wanted to let you know now, so that you had time to prepare. Dobby glanced again at Fudge, poor witness Fudge, and then Dolores, then looked again at Riddle.
True?
Or just one. We're in the process of discovering which it would be,
Riddle said.
But I'm optimistic.
It will be done, Professor Tom, sir.
Thank you. In the meantime, I would appreciate it if you would make ready a cup of tea for the Senior Undersecretary. She has had a frightful shock and will... I am being optimistic again, but not unduly, I hope. She will no doubt need a strong cup of tea when we are done. What kind do you favour, Dolores? Black or black currant, green or grey? Or have you acquired a liking for one of those imported blends, Minerals de Fevrier, Yoling Blanning? It is not a crime to like Norwegian tea on your poor taste.
Dolores couldn't quite voice any kind of response.
Never mind. Dobby, just check the Undersecretary's office and take a little of whatever there is to be found there.
Riddle said. And the elf nodded and disapparated from the room.
I will do it for you,
Dolores said.
Whatever it is that you desire, unquestioned, observed in every particular, invariably loyal, whomever you appoint, I will serve them. Do you need candidates? I could provide names, talented, diligent, most agreeable.
Her pleas were interrupted by low, harsh laughter.
You misunderstand me. I do not want you to prepare the way for the new Minister for Magic. I want you to be that minister.
I don't know it.
Fudge gripped the hem of her robes with one hand, fingers tight, seizing, squirming, while the other hand pulled at the collar of his own robe in a vain attempt to relieve the pressure on his throat. He made a mad, gulping sound, crying her name, begging for mercy. She couldn't tell.
You should probably say yes, Dolores advised.
His tone was good-natured and humored, but his eyes were desperate, and his wand was still pointed at Dolores. Below them, but not below their notice, another fish escaped Fudge's mouth. He shook. His head slapped the floor, and the cracking sound, something soft, hit her shoe. And Dolores assured herself that it was only another fish. It had to be so. She could still hear Fudge burble and choke, and more fish flop on the floor, but she could not bring herself to look.
But who's going to vote for me? I've never been a politician. I said so, and who would possibly vote for me?
She said, unsure whether continuing to talk would convince Riddle to spare her from his plan or seal her doom.
I am, of course, perfectly respectful to all magical beings, but there have been indiscretions, poorly constructed comments.
Let me worry about securing votes in the Wizengamot, Riddle said. Who there is that cannot be persuaded can be bribed or threatened or compelled, and you need only 50% of the votes plus one. Do not worry what the Wizengamot will say. I am the Wizengamot. By the time that I have need of you, I will have secured the votes that you will require.
Malfoy, Tonks, Quinn, of the 12 MWs to hold a Merlin seat. Probably half of them could be counted upon, Dolores thought. More than that, perhaps. Dolores still knew people in the DMLE. Bones would never vote her way, but Summer's End, Fudge, or his imitation, could oust Bones in that time if Dolores knew half the secrets that she did. And Bagman would surely support her, of course. The seats in Carefully and Holyhead. Pardon her, Howlick, and the other one, now that the designated magical districts had taken a legislative role, were firmly in support for Riddle. The special representatives for the non-human beings, if Riddle could convince them, if Dolores appeared sufficiently, not repentant, but adjusted, then there were another 5, 6, maybe 7 votes. The honorable representative who sat in for the Death Eaters, the representative for the Unspeakables, and Director Rookwood himself. Dolores could see it. 50% of the votes plus one. That was all she needed. The headmaster was right. But of course he was right. He was brilliant.
But why me?
She was forced to ask.
You follow directions. You understand the seriousness of your position. You won't get any ideas above your station or lose the plot like Cornelius did. I can delegate to you and trust that my will has been done before the ink is dry. Your speeches will be written for you. You will not commit to anything, not even the placement of a comma in legislation. Until I have dictated your position, you will approve the ministerial candidates that I provide to you.
Did you exert this level of control over Fudge?
He couldn't have. Why would Riddle have ever nominated Amelia Bones to run the DMLE?
I required very little of your predecessor,
Riddle said.
The yoke on his neck was easy and the burden was light. I may be more exacting of you, but only because the circumstances are more exacting. I felt faith in your ability to meet the demands of the day. But be of good cheer, he added. People will remember Dolores Umbridge as a capable wartime minister. Honor will follow you into a long, happy, and well-deserved retirement, where you are invited to all the best parties. And people hang on your words and the promise of your inevitable memoir, so long as you do as I instruct. Now then, do I have your agreement?
Dolores hardly dared to look down at Cornelius, even as her gaze seemed pulled there like a stone dropped in water.
Yes,
she forced herself to say.
Yes, whatever you want.
Headmaster Riddle turns to Dolish.
Do not forget what I said about Pettigrew. My judgment may change later, but for now you must assume that he's alive. He may still be in the country. He may already be abroad. He may be leaving, or he may be returning. These details are irrelevant. he said. Tonight, the minister's office will demand that there be at least one order working on the Pettigrew lead at all times. You'll be personally responsible for ensuring that one of our people has been assigned and that their needs are completely satisfied, every question answered, and every request fulfilled. I expect you to prevent any effort by Burns or Blackwood to obstruct the investigation.
As you say, sir.
And to make sure that this is adamantly understood, Pettigrew must be recovered alive. I can extract everything that he knows, even the things that he has forgotten or buried, but I need him alive.
Riddle's fingertips pressed just behind the edge of his mask and pulled to lift it away as if peeling off his face from the side of his jaw. Below that was another face, scarred and warped, dominated by a deep, fleshy hole where an eye should be. His head tilted, and his eye widened.
"Corblimey," he exclaimed. "It sure did a number on Fudge."
"Sir?"
Riddle's eye refocused on John. He stared for a moment, then snapped his fingers.
"Right, sorry."
Taking the elbow of his prosthetic in hand, he wrenched it off his body with a schlup and passed it to Dolores. It was heavy in her hands and warm, and Riddle's eye bulged, and in the space of one long moment his face sloughed like candle wax and smoothed like glass. And while that solitary eye gazed upon her, all the other features of a face emerged, pointed chin and white cheekbones framed by curly brown hair. And the eye turned bright and blue, matched in every particular by its long-lost twin.
"Don't get too used to it, but is this better?"
asked whoever this was. Fudge had been right, hadn't he? Riddle had been replaced.
"Call me Tonks,"
the woman said, extending a hand to Dolores.
"You don't know me from Merlin, I reckon, but I remember you."
From where?
"Oh, you know, here and there. The Death Eater likes to keep an eye on the spoons that stir the tea, if you know what I'm saying."
The woman, Tonks, looked down again at Fudge and clicked her tongue.
"Stay pretty for me a minute, Niels," she said.
And she began to change again. Her frame grew short and wide, flowing like quicksilver, and her face softened as it became a mirror of Fudge's own. And then her head twisted, one way and then the other, as if Tonks were inspecting her new appearance reflected off of Fudge's eyes. John spoke first. John spoke at all.
"You killed the Minister for Magic,"
he said. And she could kill Dolores just as easily, any time that she desired. People might not even know if she decided to take Dolores's face. Tonks looked down at the body. A bare glance before she twitched, and was that a shudder? And turned her face away.
"Can we be a little more precise? I didn't kill him."
"You rather did kill him,"
John insisted.
"I know it looks that way to you, but really it's the Death Eater that killed him. Merlin, don't you think I would have been a little nicer? I was just around, in a physical sense."
Was it some form of the Imperius curse? Dolores knew very little about that. Well, they were hardly unforgivable anymore, were they? The emergency powers loophole had to be wearing thin by now, but nobody important had yet been willing to accuse Britain of violating the Peking Convention. But whatever their legal status might be, Dolores knew even less of magical...
"And you, Umbridge," Tonks said.
And Dolores realized that she had lost track of the conversation while she had alienated herself from the present circumstances.
Yes,
she stammered. Had Tonks changed her mind? Merlin, they were going to kill her after all. Murder her just like they had murdered poor, thick Cornelius.
"You're not Nocklemans."
The answer was difficult to speak, worried as Dolores was that she was about to utter her own order of execution.
No,
she admitted. There were awful ways to die. Silence would earn a bad one. Lying would merit worse.
"Please, Miss Tonks, I..."
She began to beg.
"Shut up,"
Tonks said, and Dolores did so.
"I don't care if you won't bet. Shut up, I'll let you through, and neither does the Death Eater. But the Death Eater does think that you can work for us,"
Tonks continued.
"Can you do that?"
Dolores did not dare to look down at Cornelius.
"Yes,
sir, that's the important part. We can work around the Occlumency, I mean the lack thereof. Folks could hardly have governments if they could only elect an Occlumens."
Tonks smiled.
"Aye, come on, though.
You're getting a promotion. What's your problem?
I...
Many thoughts tried to emerge from her throat at that moment. None made it out.
Nothing is wrong,
Dolores said. Then, thinking better of her words, she added,
Miss Tonks.
Aces. Curtains down,
Tonks said.
Over to you, Dobby.
Your tea, madame,
the elf said. And no sooner had he pressed the cup into her hands, he was gone again. And Fudges, the minister's, the body was gone. Fish and all. No problem at all. Dolores closed her eyes and let herself feel nothing but the tea, smell nothing but the tea. Nothing was going to happen to her, no problems. She only had to follow her instructions, and they were good instructions, clearly given. Cornelius Fudge had gotten what was coming to him, but Dolores Umbridge, well. She was only getting what had been coming to her, too. Good work deserved a good reward. But, Dolores noted, she was going to need a new pair of shoes.
For the full text of this and other stories by the same author, visit the Archive of Our Own page of Call Me Saltiside. The music is Amon Ra by Dayswitch, under a Creative Commons license, with assistance from 1T1. If you would like to commission me to record a story, voiceover, or character, please get in touch with me using the contact information on my website, which is located at samgabrielvo.com. And there you can find other stories that I've read, as well as links to my Patreon page, to which I hope you consider subscribing to support me, and my Discord server, where I record things live for your enjoyment. And finally, as always, thank you for listening.